Cousins, hands to Cook, goes to the left, towards the goal line, turns to the goal line. Did he break the plane? Yes, he did. Touchdown, Minnesota. With 7 seconds left in the first half, second effort for Dalvin Cook gives him a 4-yard score.
Exhilarating Thursday night football game. Vikings knock off the hapless Redskins. 19-9 was the final last night. We'll have more NFL coming up, including the Chiefs and their big showdown with the Packers on Sunday night. And who will be quarterback? Odds are it'll be Matt Moore, but we'll discuss that coming up. We'll hear from Andy Reid as well. But we have a lot of local sports we want to get to. This is a very busy time of the year because you've got regional cross-country, sub-state volleyball, and the high school football regular season is winding down. So I'll just let Dusty start where he would like to start today on a Friday.
Let's start with cross country. We'll knock that out since we have more stuff involved with volleyball and football. Regional cross country is coming up tomorrow, and in Class 3A, Beloit will be at Norton. The girls race at 10:30, boys at 11:15. Girls we're keeping an eye on for Beloit are Hannah Brooks and Haley Brooks. They've had great seasons, and we'll see how they can fare. They'd be your top chances to qualify for state from our area there. Also, Class 2A Smith Center's at Great Bend. Girls 11:20 and boys at noon tomorrow. And then 1A, everybody from our immediate areas at Washington County, St. John's, Lakeside, Tipton, Osborne, Rock Hills, Sylvan, Lucas, Lincoln, Pike Valley, Milton Vale, and Glasgow. On the girls' side, 10 o'clock start time for that race. The boys start at 10:40. Some that we're looking at in our area, top girls runners, J.C. Vath is the defending state champion in Class 1A for Lincoln. Reagan Stewart and Shelby Ford were also on the Lincoln team that won the team championship last year in 1A. And don't know if they'll have a chance to repeat as team champions, but J.C. Vath definitely has a really good chance of defending her 1A title. Jane Letourneau of St. John's has had a good season. Jalen Weesey of Tipton, a couple of other runners that we're looking out for there on the girls' side. And then on the boys' side, Caleb Eilert of St. John's, Reagan Bales, Cameron Delaney, and Graham Bales of Osborne have all had great seasons. And Jensen Eilert of Rock Hills are some of the names that we're keeping an eye on for a chance to qualify for state next week in Wamego there in Class 1A. So cross country, a lot of area athletes should have a good chance to do some good things coming up here on Saturday, tomorrow, at regional cross country. All right. Do you want to do football first, or we're going to talk with Brandy Ball first?
Football.
Okay, we'll go football, and then we'll do volleyball after that. So football tonight, our games of the week will start at 6:30. First, we have the Football Express presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 5:40, as we'll preview all the area league matchups, the Mid-Continent League, North Central Activities Association, Northern Plains League here tonight. Our games of the week feature two district championship games on Katy Country 94, Osborne at Thunder Ridge. Pre-game coverage at 6:30 and kickoff at 7 o'clock. And John Bowden will have the call on that one tonight. And then on Z96.3 through the Lake of Rock Hills at St. John's Tipton is a district championship, 8-man Division II, District 4. Pre-game 6:30 and kickoff at 7. And then we'll have the local high school football scoreboard show to wrap up our game night coverage at 10:05 here tonight. Also, Wade's in Beloit with online video stream. Russell at Beloit, 3A District 8, ncksports.com. And just a quick look at the other immediate area games tonight. Sylvan Lucas hosting Wilson in district play. Lakeside in a non-district game hosting Blue Valley Randolph tonight. Lincoln's at Clifton Clyde in Division 1, District 7. And Smith Center has a district championship in 1A as they take on El Saline. So that's a look at the immediate area schedule here this evening for high school football.
All right, two big district championship showdowns tonight on our radio stations. We'll start with the Battle of Undefeateds. Thunder Ridge in Kensington tonight, 7-0, hosting the number one team in the state, 8-man Division II, the Osborne Bulldogs, who are also 7-0. And Joel Strukoff, head coach of the Longhorns, on what makes the Osborne Bulldog defense so good.
I think just speed. I think they use their speed so well on defense. You know, everyone was, you know, I think a lot of coaches thought that Osborne wasn't going to be as physical this year, and they definitely are. But they just know where to hit people, you know, with their speed. They're hitting, they're chopping people low. They're not hitting anyone high. Good fundamental tackles.
Reece Strukoff, of course, is the key of Thunder Ridge. He's having a monster year. Coach Tiernan of Osborne knows all about Reece Strukoff.
Well, and I'm sure he would say the same thing. His line does a great job for him. I mean, there's a lot of touchdowns he has that he doesn't even get touched on. Part of that's due to the fact he's fast. He is very fast. And, I mean, he's basically got the whole package. He's good size, 190 pounds. He's strong, and he's fast. And those are three pretty good things to have to play football.
Thunder Ridge, Osborne tonight on KD Country 94, kdcountry94.com. Get the free KD Country 94 app on your smartphone. You can listen to that one as Thunder Ridge hosting Osborne. The winner is district champion. The loser, district runner-up. Both teams will have first-round games next week in the eight-man Division II playoffs. So loser of that game, not a big deal, but it is a big deal when you look at St. John's Tipton Rock Hills tonight, our game of the week on Z96.3 The Lake. And KDCountry94.com. Get the Z96.3 Lake free app on your smartphones. You can listen there wherever you may be across the world. As St. John's Tipton and Rock Hills, it is very important, much more important than the Osborne Thunder Ridge in regards to who finishes first and second from this standpoint. The cross district, you have Axtell, Hanover, Frankfort. Those three teams are in the top five in the state. They're all very, very, very good. And then it drops off to Onega. Would you rather play Onega at home or Axtell, Frankfort, or Hanover? And everybody will raise their hand and say, I would like to take on Onega or anybody not named Axtell, Hanover, or Frankfort in the first round at home next week. Well, the winner of this game will get their wish. The loser will host either Frankfort, Axtell, or Hanover next week in the first round of the eight-man playoffs. Colby Hamill, first-year head coach of Rock Hills. His team concerned about St. John's Tipton.
Athleticism, and they're lengthy. They got some guys who can get out in space. They throw the ball well. They'll spread you out. And, you know, they'll run it up the middle if they need to. You know, I just think hat for hat, they match us athleticism-wise. So we'll see, you know, who plays better, who plays harder. You know, I hopefully everyone has their best game tonight.
Dean Gingler, also in his first year as head coach at St. John's Tipton, discusses the matchup and certainly understands Rock Hills has size.
We want to go out and do the, you know, a lot of things, you know, position-wise, you know, getting the assignments right, and that'll help us, you know, against somebody with a little more size. If we make sure we hit the spots we're supposed to hit and get people blocked, I mean, that's the game overall, blocking and tackling. That's what's going to be this week too. I think if we can go out and block where we need to and tackle where we need to, then I think we'll be in decent shape to accomplish what we want to. And I'm sure they feel the same. So it's a good even matchup as far as I can see on things, and looking forward to it.
Very important game over in Beloit tonight. St. John's Tipton hosting Rock Hills, winner district champ, and the loser will be district runner-up, but both would have home games next week. But as we established, there is a big difference between being second in this district and first in regards to your competition in the first round of the playoffs next week. Beloit is hosting Russell tonight, senior night at Trojan Field there in Beloit. 12 seniors will be honored there for the football team. And Beloit, well, they're 4-3. They're 2-2 in district. They have not clinched a playoff spot. It's funny that the folks that I've talked to, many Trojan fans, I think they think that the Beloit's in the playoffs. They have not clinched a spot yet. That is not official. They have to win tonight to assure a playoff berth. If they win tonight, they could go as high as the number 2 seed and get a first-round home game in the playoffs next week. They look like they would be assured no worse than 3 if they win tonight against Russell. Russell's coming off a shutout win over Goodland last week, 25-0, their first win of the year for the Broncos. Played Concordia pretty tough earlier in the year, and Beloit coming off the emotional win against Scott City, then the emotional, tough, hard-fought loss to Concordia last week. And if Beloit does win tonight by 21 or more and Scott City wins by 20 or less against Concordia out in Scott City tonight, then Beloit will be the number 2 seed. They win the point three-way tiebreaker when it comes to points between them, Concordia, and Scott City. If that is the situation that develops tonight, and Beloit would have a first round game at home, if Concordia wins over Scott City and Beloit wins, then Beloit would be a 3 seed and be on the road first round of the playoffs. And as we said, there could be some weird scenarios, especially if Russell would play Beloit really close. There's a chance Concordia could still lose in a really close game to Scott City, and if Beloit barely beats Russell, Concordia could still win the three-way tiebreaker when it comes to points. So there's tons of scenarios out there in that district. But the first things first, Beloit's got to win. And if they win tonight, then they will be in the playoffs. And then they'll just have to see what happens between Scott City and Concordia in regards to whether Beloit will be at home or on the road in the playoffs. But once again, they have not officially punched their ticket into the playoffs quite yet. Beloit hosting Russell tonight, live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan Channel at 6:45 this evening. So high school football regular season winding down. We'll know the playoff brackets tomorrow. Acacia will release that. We'll get that posted as soon as we can or have a link directly to it because I know that I'll be busy tomorrow with Sub-State Volleyball coverage on live video stream at ncksports.com via Beloit Trojan Channel, as we'll have coverage on the video stream of the Beloit Lady Trojans, the number one seed at the 3A substate out of Hoisington. They are 34-3, ranked third in the state. They are the one seed. TMP Lions, two very good teams on the other side of the bracket. And we'll get more on that in a moment as we'll talk to the head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans, Brandy Paul. But first, let's go through the rest of the substates with volleyball. As Smith Center certainly has a good chance to make state. Thunder Ridge, St. John's, Tipton have to play well to make state, but they are capable of doing that. But they do have some tough draws. We mentioned Smith Center has a pretty good draw, although there's a really good team on the other half of the bracket out of Waukini. Concordia, a very tough 3A substate as well. Lincoln, I don't want to leave them out either. They were regional champs, and they've got a tough draw, too, in 1A. So I'll let Dusty go through the substate volleyball before we talk to Brandy Paul.
Yeah, we look at first-round matchups for the 1A teams at Centralia. Lincoln is 25-12. They'll face Frankfort 23-14, approximately 2 o'clock coming up tomorrow afternoon there in Centralia. And then in the bottom side, the second substate there in Centralia, St. John's Tipton, number 6 seed, has a 31-8 record. They'll take on Clifton Clyde, who's 27-11, the 3 seed. At approximately 6 o'clock, if St. John's Tipton could get past that, then they'd probably end up meeting Centralia in a substate championship match there. So that's what's coming up 1A tomorrow for St. John's Tipton and Lincoln and Centralia. Thunder Ridge is the 1A Western Plains substate in Ransom, as they're 32-6, the number 6 seed. They take on Central Plains, who's the number 3 seed at 27-11. They won their home regional last week. Did Central Plains approximately 2 o'clock start time. Wheatland Grinnell could be waiting on the top of the bracket as well. If Thunder Ridge could get a win over Central Plains, it's a very tough substate that Thunder Ridge is involved in there in Class 1A. And as Wade mentioned, 2A, Smith Center's at the Trigo substate in Waukini, coming off their MCL title. They come in at 31-4, the number 1 seed. They face 3-27 Oakley, the number 8 seed in the first round at 2 o'clock Saturday. As Wade said, there was a pretty good other top competitor there for Smith Center. Ellenwood's the number 2 seed and has an identical 31-4 record, plays in a tough Central Prairie League, and will definitely be a formidable opponent should Smith Center get that far.
They're
and Ellenwood get that
as well.
Far as well. Yep, they're both state ranked, mm-hmm. and definitely a quality opponent that Smith Center could face if they both get to the championship match. So obviously every coach is going to tell you we got to get there first before we worry about who we're playing there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that wraps up the area teams that are competing in 1 and 2A from North Central Kansas here in Katy Country 94 listening area.
Concordia is in the 3A substate. Nemaw Central, who do they have in the first round?
I didn't have that on my rundown list here. I'll have to double check on that one.
All right. We'll move on. Yeah. Brandy Paul, head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans. They've been the state 3 of the last 4 years. Last year getting third place and hanging a banner in the gym. This year they have higher aspirations. Certainly they have the opportunity to win a state championship, the first in school history. But first, you got to make it to state. And it doesn't matter how many wins you have in a row. TMP started year 4-4, and then they lost to Beloit. They were 9-5. They won 20 in a row and then lost in the Mid-Continent League Finals and the tournament in Norton to Smith Center here recently. TMP, really good team on the bottom half of the bracket. Beloit beat them earlier in the year in a four-set match. They lost the first set, won the last three, and the last two sets were extremely close. Lions is a very talented young team. They are 28-9. They've played some really good competition, have some good wins, and have some tough losses. They've lost four times to Heston, and twice they went to three sets, and Heston beat Beloit earlier this year. So it doesn't matter how many wins you have when you go into substate, other than it helps you when it comes to seeding and when you play and when you get a break. Brandy Paul, head coach of Beloit Lady Trojans. Dusty had a chance to interview her. And here's this conversation with the Trojan head coach as Beloit 3 wins away from going to state for the fourth time in 5 years.
Welcome back on Katy Country 94 Sports. Dusty Donis joined now by Brandy Paul, the coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans, getting ready for substate this weekend. Coach, as you get prepared for this substate, you're coming off of another great season, 34-3 overall, 12-0 in the NCAA, and riding high after you finish the league undefeated again. Just kind of looking at your team going into substate, how do you feel about where you're at this point in time?
Oh, I feel really good. The girls have played hard all season and consistent, and I think where we are where we need to be. We have gotten better each week, worked on little things, and I think they're ready to go.
You started with Larned here in the first round of substate. They're just 2-33, and I know that they're your focus here as you open out. You want to take it one match at a time, but when you look at Larned and see what they've got, what are some of the things you hope the girls are focusing on when they come out that first match?
I want them to come out and just be ready and play our game. Don't get sloppy. Play a clean game with errors, no errors, and stay fired up. We need that enthusiasm no matter what
level we're playing at, and just to start us off, just to, you know, go out there and be consistent and make sure that we take care of business with that first game.
When you look at this sub-state as a whole and kind of try to see where you're at, because this, you know, volleyball is a different sport and you don't have time to prepare. You win, you move on to the next match, you have to do all your preparation before you get there for the most part. So when you look at this sub-state, how does it stack up to some of them maybe you've seen in the past and maybe some of them around the state this year?
Yeah. Second round, we'll see either Hoisington or Cimarron. I don't know much about Cimarron. Hoisington, we have played early on a couple weeks ago. And that was a good match. You know, they were scrappy, but we played well against them. And, you know, we stack up pretty good against them and just with what we have. TMP, we saw early season, beginning of September, mid-September. And they're really good. And I've watched them and scouted them all year because I figured they'd be at our sub-state. And they've continued to improve. When we went down there, we went 4-1 with them. They beat us the first set, and then the other three were close. So I know they're good. Lions, I've been scouting them, and they're a solid team, too. So, you know, that second round, TMP, I would assume it will be TMP and Lions that will battle it out, that 2nd and 3rd seed, and we'll see one of them. And, you know, like you said, with volleyball, you never know which one. I hate to focus too much on one. Because it could surprise me and be the other one. So we're kind of, you know, just working on playing our game. And, you know, that's key for us going into the sub-state. Not worrying about how they play, but keep to our game plan. And if we do that, we should be okay.
Your team has had a lot of success over the past 5 to 6 years. And last year you finally got the banner home. Just if you stack this team up with some of the ones in the past, how do you feel that this group compares to those?
This is my strongest team yet, which is hard to believe with some of the teams I've had in the past years. We've had some really strong teams and great groups, but all the way around, this is my strongest one yet. We have weapons at every position, especially hitting position, and our back row is playing extremely well. And then my two setters, Jess and Mackenzie, we play that 6-2, and them two work as one. I mean, a lot, you know, the disadvantage to 6-2 is you have two different setting styles, and these two work together as one. And if one plays defense, the other one steps in and sets it, and they get to everything. The girls can count on that they'll be there, and they'll get it set up and make it hittable. So, yeah, I just feel that this group is just strong all the way around. We have weapons everywhere. On any given night, our hitters, you know, we have 6 strong hitters, and they're as good as each other. And on any night, it could, you know, the one could be the one on, and on several nights we've had them all on, and so that's pretty amazing when you get that much consistent through the whole team. And you really, I don't feel we have a weak spot, and so I think that's huge for us.
I know that you've talked about some of the opponents you might see, but what does Beloit have to do? If you give me a couple things that you have to do to be able to make it back to state.
We've been really focusing on our coverage, just the little things. You know, I think if we play our game, we'll be okay, but we have been really focusing on the little things. Blocking is key. We've got to shut down some big hitters, and not just stuff blocks, but even just getting a touch to slow down some of them hitters, the speed on the ball. We just get a touch to slow it down for our back row. They'll get there and get it up. And the other key thing is coverage. We want to swing all the time. We want to hit the ball and not give free balls. And so I tell my hitters, trust your coverage. Trust that they're there. Swing away, and if you get blocked, we'll be there to get you back up. So them are two keys, and just being consistent all the way around with, you know, I think whoever, especially semis and championship game, whoever makes less errors, you know, hitting the ball out, hitting it in the net, serves, just some little things, keeping the ball in play and swinging at it.
Randy Paul, the coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans here on Katy Country 94 Sports. Coach, thanks for the time. Best of luck out at Hoisington at Substate this weekend.
Thank you.
Well, one of the advantages Beloit has is that TMP and Lions more than likely will meet each other in a tough semifinal. Beloit should have an easy first-round match against 2-33 Larned. And then the second-round match, the semifinal, Hoisington, a team that beat Lions earlier this year, so you can't sleep on them. Cimarron, don't know a lot about them and their strength of competition, but they do have 15 losses, 19-15, Hoisington 14-22. So on paper, Beloit should be in the sub-state championship against either TMP or Lions. TMP only has one senior on their roster. They're very talented, and they're getting better and better throughout the year, and much better than they were last time when Beloit beat them. That's what Coach Paul told me the other day. So it'll be a battle, and in order to make it to state, you have to beat good teams, and there's no question Beloit's going to have to beat at least one really good team to make it to state. And if they do make it to state, we'll have coverage of Beloit Lady Trojans at state volleyball down in Hutchison. And if any of the other area teams make it to state, we will do everything we can to cover them with play-by-play at state volleyball as well. 1A and 2A is out at Dodge, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll say that. So if you had Smith Center and Thunder Ridge, or Smith Center, St. John's Tipton, or Smith Center, Lincoln, or whatever it may be, hopefully we can be out there covering those teams. It just depends on how the schedule and personnel and shifts and times and everything else, because we also have high school football playoff games next Thursday night on Halloween, and then we hopefully have a high school football playoff game next Friday as well, and state volleyball Friday and Saturday. So, yeah, we'll have a lot to cover perhaps if we have teams that make it to state volleyball. We could have three or four teams that make it. We could have zero. So we'll find that out coming up later tomorrow with sub-state volleyball. So best of luck to all those teams in the area in sub-state volleyball. Concordia plays who?
They play Marysville tomorrow at Nemaha Central. They'll be the second match, so they're the 3-seed Marysville, the 6-seed. It'll be about 2:45, 3 o'clock tomorrow.
That's in a tough sub-state. So Bethel's the 1-seed, Nemaha Central 2, and they always seem to be very good. So Concordia be competing at that sub-state. And, of course, we mentioned regional cross-country. Best of luck to all those individuals competing there this weekend as well. Well, hard to believe, but basketball season is already here as the KU Jayhawks men's basketball team ranked third in the country. Preseason pick to win the Big 12 after not winning it last year, after winning it 14 years in a row. Bill Self's team only up two early in the second half against Fort Hays State at Allen Fieldhouse, and then turned up the defensive pressure and went on the win by 30. And Bill Self, his impressions of the exhibition opener last night, which you could have heard on Z96.3 Lake.
I don't know that I was totally impressed about too much, but I do think this. I thought after the first 4 minutes of the first half and the first 2 minutes of the second half, I thought we actually guarded pretty well, and they made eight threes, and six of them were on our two bigs. So we got to do a better job of getting the shooters. And that's something we've emphasized, but obviously that was an issue tonight. But, we didn't shoot the ball well, but Marcus was terrific, and Ochai, once he got in the flow, was okay and played well. And I thought our freshmen did fine. So, playing without Devon and Isaiah and, those two would probably be, in our top three, both as far as three-point shooters, and to not have them out there when a team, backs off like that and defends the post, I think could have made a little bit of a difference as well.
Ochai with 21 points, 3 three-pointers. Marcus Garrett with 4 threes last night, 15 points. He played the point guard spot, did a nice job, but it is against Fort Hays State. Got to keep that in mind. That's no knock on Fort Hays State, but they are Division II. KU is Division I. KU will be playing Pittsburgh State next Thursday. In their second exhibition game in a few weeks, they will play number 4 Duke. And Dotson, as you heard, and Isaiah Moss out last night due to injury. They hope to have those guys back soon. I don't know how this is going to work for KU with DeSosa and Azubuike. I don't think they can both be on the floor at the same time. And I saw some people that are ill-informed and don't remember very well saying, well, DeSosa was great with Doka in that Elite Eight game against Duke. You do realize that they both weren't on the floor at all in that game. I mean, it was Doak was on the bench, and DeSosa was in the game, and Doak stayed on the bench because KU was better with DeSosa on the floor in that game. The same thing against Villanova in the Final Four when they got blown out early, but Doak was a liability because he can't guard the three-point shot. And so I don't think you can have DeSosa and Doak play together a lot, at least not initially. And then Doak needs a space inside as well. So I think you're going to have to see a rotation, McCormick, Doak, and DeSosa, which means KU is going to end up going small, even though the depth in the front court. Mitch Lightfoot played last night. He can play in exhibition games. He will more than likely redshirt, although he's the one out of those bigs that could stretch the floor and hit an occasional three. So I don't know what KU is going to do there. I would guess they're going to redshirt Lightfoot, but, if there's an injury here suddenly, that might change things, or somebody becomes ineligible, whatever the case may be. But I do think that everybody's all excited about DeSosa being ready to go, but I don't see how him and Doak can work on the floor very well together. I think it causes all kinds of defensive problems for Kansas trying to guard teams that stretch it out, shoot threes. But we shall see. Maybe they'll figure it out. Bill Self said probably 20 minutes of every game we're going to do a four-guard lineup. Well, that's half of a game.
Yeah.
So that means DeSosa and Doak won't be on the floor at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see the minutes distribution for the KU men's basketball team. K-State will be in action Coming up tonight against Emporia State. That'll be at 8 o'clock. First chance to see the Wildcats in action. And before you know it, K-State and KU will be playing games that count for good on the win-loss column. All right. We mentioned the Redskins losing to the Vikings last night, NFL football 19-9. The Packers are at the Chiefs, 6 o'clock pregame, kickoff at 7:20 this Sunday night on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas. Of course, the big story is Patrick Mahomes injured last Thursday against the Broncos, dislocated kneecap. He's done some light practicing this week. It does seem to be, and this is what everybody assumed, but you got to be careful when you assume, is that the Chiefs will have Matt Moore as their starting quarterback. He's taken most of the first team reps, if not all of them. Chad Henne's back at practice, but he's not eligible to play until after week 8, which would be after this game. So that'll be interesting to see how the Chiefs handle that. Matt Moore, Chad Henne, and how long Mahomes is out. That'll be very interesting how they juggle that. Kyle Shermer's active, which means that they probably aren't going to play Mahomes either. DeAnthony Thomas was released earlier this week, and a lot of Chiefs fans say, about time. So the game plan. Andy Reid talks about it for different quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, you know, these game plans are long, large, and so there are parts of it that are good for all of them, whoever's going to be suited up, and there might be a specific thing here or there that you kind of match for the guy's ability, his strengths, but other than that, you just roll with it. So they've all got to learn it. I mean, these guys know that in a second they could be in. You know, that's especially a veteran guy like Matt.
Matt Moore gets hurt. Probably Kyle Shermer is your quarterback. That's certainly a little bit scary because it's scary for any team when you have to go to your third-string quarterback. A lot of times you don't even have a good backup. You definitely don't have a great third-stringer because if you did,
no, odds
are they would be a second-stringer somewhere else or a starter.
Yeah.
So there's a reason. Andy Reid talks about Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks that we've ever seen. He's won one Super Bowl, and he's playing well, coming off a huge game against the Raiders.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're talking about a future Hall of Famer, and he's playing like a future Hall of Famer. So he's playing great football, and he's sharp right now, and accurate, and he's running the offense like he always does. I mean, at a Hall of Fame level.
You know, early in the year, the Packers defense was playing very well, running the ball efficiently, not great but efficiently, and the Packer offense was struggling a little bit. But you just knew it's a matter of time before the Packers start figuring some things out with Aaron Rodgers. Last week they did. 5 touchdown passes, a perfect quarterback rating, over 400 yards passing for Rodgers. He had a rushing touchdown as well. And let's be honest, the teams that give the Chiefs trouble are teams that have quarterbacks that are mobile, that can move around. Aaron Rodgers doesn't move around quite as much. He doesn't run as much. Now, he will move around, and he buys time, and that's what makes him special. And Patrick Mahomes does the exact same thing. Russell Wilson, you look at the Chiefs' games this year, you know, Jacoby Brissett was able to move around a little bit. Deshaun Watson, of course, he can move around. Lamar Jackson, they did a decent job on him, although early in the game they struggled. Derek Carr, sit in the pocket passer. Nick Foles, sit in the pocket. Matthew Stafford, sit in the pocket. You get past this game, Kirk Cousins is pretty much a pocket passer. Ryan Tannehill, if he's still the quarterback for the Titans, he sits in the pocket. Phillip Rivers is usually a sitting duck in the pocket. And then you got Derek Carr and the Raiders again. Tom Brady's a guy that sits in the pocket. Joe Flacco, we saw what the Chiefs did against him when he sits in the pocket, whether he's even the starter. Coming up December 15th when the Chiefs play him at Arrowhead. Mitch Trubisky doesn't really move around a ton. And they got Phillip Rivers. So, really, this could very well be the last mobile quarterback the Chiefs face the rest of the season. I think that bodes well for the Chiefs defense because they have had problems. You think about quarterbacks that are mobile. They buy time. They extend the play. If you can't get a pass rush, that makes them even more dangerous because now they got 5, 6, 7 seconds, who knows how long, to throw against your secondary. And either the secondary is going to hold, pass interference, or give up a big play when you can't get a pass rush. So when you got to contain Aaron Rodgers. And we hear that every single week when teams get prepared for the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Got to keep him in the pocket. And how's that work out? There's always a play or two where he gets out of the pocket. You can say that all you want, but it's not easy to do. Yeah. Same thing applies here with Aaron Rodgers. Does he scramble as much as he once did? Not quite, but he's still, you know, it's prime time. He's competitive. He's going to make some plays where he gets out of the pocket, avoids a sack against this Chiefs defense. So the question for the Chiefs, there's a few questions for this game. First of all, I think the Chiefs can win this game. And I think the Chiefs are going to find a way to win this game. I can't explain how they're going to win it. I don't have a perfect recipe on how they're going to win it. But I would think that the Chiefs defense is going to, one, have to play decent. They're going to have to slow down the run. They're going to have to get a turnover or two. And the Chiefs are going to have to be able to run the ball. If the Chiefs can't run the ball in this game, I just don't see the Chiefs You know, if Andy Reid decides to dial up 35 passes on 11 runs, I don't see the Chiefs beating the Packers. They have to have LeSean McCoy, Damian Williams. They're going to have to get the running game established, take some pressure off Matt Moore. You know, have 10 days of practice Moore's had or something like that. That will help in regards to working with Hill and Kelce. Watkins, it sounds like, might be back. That's a weapon. But how big of a deal is that if they don't throw the ball as much? I don't know. But, you know, this game, I think it's easy. I think the easy thing to do, I think the lazy pick is to take the Packers. That's the lazy pick because it's automatic. There's no Mahomes. Well, I'll just be lazy. The Chiefs only have one player on their team. It's Mahomes. Take Mahomes away, the Chiefs can't win a game. That's what some of the national media thinks. We see this all the time in sports. We see it in football. We see it in college. We see it in pro, where for a week or two, and sometimes longer, you can have a backup quarterback come in, and the team has to reinvent itself. So the Chiefs, in order to reinvent themselves, what they have to do in this game, they're probably not going to score 35 points. They're not going to win a shootout, more than likely. Now, they can against anybody with Patrick Mahomes. Matt Moore, not a guy probably going to win a shootout with. And he's probably going to be more likely to make a mistake than Patrick Mahomes in regards to throwing a pick. So what do? You have to establish the running game. You shorten the game a little bit. If you can establish a running game, you take some pressure off Matt Moore. You can use some play action. You take some deep shots down the field. Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest was with us earlier this week, and he said, you know, I think it's going to be like the Alex Smith Chiefs offense. Well, you know, that offense wasn't bad.
No.
It wasn't horrible. In fact, it was pretty good the last year Alex Smith was there. So now we got to keep in mind, Smith was in the system for how many years? And, of course, Matt Moore has been in the system for a few months with Andy Reid. But I do, you see it so many times. I mean, we've seen it with the Saints, and they've got a good team around Teddy Bridgewater, but they've been able to win without skipping a beat after losing Drew Brees. We've seen other teams bench their starter and then win with backups. Well, we saw it with the Tennessee Titans recently. We see it with teams year in and year out. Well, we saw it with the Philadelphia Eagles, for crying out loud. Carson Wentz, who was an MVP candidate, got hurt a couple years ago, and Nick Foles steps in, and they win the Super Bowl. We see Matt Castle do it with Tom Brady years ago. It happens a lot where a quarterback gets hurt and the team rallies. The defense, I think, mentally, they know they got to step it up. Now, they knew they had to step it up before Mahomes got hurt, but now it's imperative that they really step it up because they can't give up 31 points and say, well, you know, Mahomes, we'll be all right because we can match them score for score. You're probably not going to be able to do that with Matt Moore as your quarterback, especially right off the bat. So that means the defense has to play better. And it did against Denver, but Joe Flacco is no Aaron Rodgers. And the Green Bay offensive line is better than the Denver offensive line. And the Green Bay Packers come in with a record of 6-1, and they've got some guys they can throw to, and they're a really good football team. Their defense, honestly, might be better than what the Broncos have right now. But it's their Arrowhead. It's on grass. Of course, Packers play on grass, too. But the Packers aren't as good on the road, typically, as they are at home. It's prime time. Arrowhead's jacked. Chiefs usually do well in prime time at Arrowhead, although they did blow that game against the Chargers last year. But the Chiefs are undefeated on the road this year, and their two losses are to two good teams at home, the Colts and the Texans. So, you know, what are the odds the Chiefs are going to lose three straight at home? Well, many people would say it's pretty high because Patrick Mahomes is not playing. Listen, LeSean McCoy can step up. Travis Kelce can make some plays. I would think Tyreek Hill might be involved in the running game just a little bit, perhaps, if they feel like he's 100% healthy, or Sammy Watkins. You might see some new wrinkles from Andy Reid in regards to getting some plays in the running game. I would guess we're going to see more screen passes on Sunday night, I would think, which the Chiefs have a lot of different screen passes. That might slow down the pass rush and give Moore some confidence early on. And we saw Alex Smith do the quick wide receiver screen, the dink and the dunk. We saw that a lot. You know, we got tired of it after a while. But it still was not bad. I mean, the Chiefs were a good or decent offense playing that way. They just got to have the defense step up and make a few plays coming up Sunday night. So I think the formula is there for the Chiefs to win. It's not like this is a mismatch just because Mahomes is out. And who knows, maybe Mahomes somehow plays as the emergency quarterback. I doubt it. But I think everybody, it's very easy not to think at all and just immediately go, no Mahomes, Packers win. Well, guess what? That's what they said with Teddy Bridgewater and the Saints when they went to Seattle. To Seattle. Very tough place to play against Russell Wilson. Everybody said, well, Seahawks going to win that game. And the Saints took care of them. So that's why you play the game.
Oh, without question. You look at all that. It's about the Chiefs going out and executing what you're talking about. It's about actually doing those things. And Andy Reid has not shown that he really wants to run the ball a lot this year. And I think that is going to be a key to be able to establish the ground game. And if you can do that, then obviously you're going to you're going to shorten the game and have less opportunities for the Packers to have the football with Aaron Rodgers. And if you can do that, then, yeah, I think you have a very good chance to win. I'm still leaning toward the Packers to win the game.
Sure, but, if you're logically thinking, you'll probably pick the Packers. But what I'm saying in regards to the lazy pick is you don't even think about it.
You know, we're both
I'm not calling you. I'm not saying your pick's lazy. What I'm saying is
for sure.
People that don't even – the national media, they don't even take the time to break the game down. Yeah. They're just like, well, there's no Mahomes, so the Packers are going to win.
Yeah,
what happens if Aaron Rodgers is out of the game on the first play?
Yeah.
Suddenly everything changes, doesn't it?
Can
you name the backup quarterback for the Packers?
It used to be Brett Hundley. I don't know if it is anymore.
I don't think it is. Yeah. I don't know who it is. So that could change things in a hurry. We all act like we know what we're talking about, but one injury changes everything. All you got to do is go back. And here's the thing. If you would have told everybody the Chiefs would be up 10-6 when Patrick Mahomes goes out of the game against Denver, you know what everybody would have said? Most people, Chiefs fans, oh, we're going to lose that game. Chiefs outscored them 20-0 the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So when we think you got to figure it out, we don't. That's why I play the games.
Exactly. You got to go out there and do everything. And like, I mean, I don't care who the Chiefs quarterback is. If Andy Reid's offense is executing properly,
they still got
they're
going
to have a really good chance to be successful.
Sure.
No matter who's playing the quarterback. Again, obviously with Mahomes, you have you're more dynamic.
Yeah, bigger plays.
Way more plays that you can run. And,
sure.
And obviously it's a different thing. But, I mean, Alex Smith won a lot of games in Andy Reid's offense.
Yes, he did. And he was the number one rated quarterback his last year with the Chiefs.
And I don't think anybody's like clamoring that he's going to be a Hall of Famer or even one of the best quarterbacks, you know, top 10 quarterbacks historically during his time in the league.
Well, there's something Andy Reid liked about Matt Moore, because between Chad Henne and Matt Moore, when they were deciding who their backup was a few years ago, it was a dead heat. And they eventually went with Henne. And then as soon as Henne went down, they made one quick phone call to Matt Moore, who was coaching high school football. And now he's the quarterback of the Chiefs and playing Sunday night football against the Packers. I'm guessing he didn't think that was happening back in July.
No.
You just never know. That's what's great about sports. You could have quite the story where Matt Moore goes out Sunday night and throws for 300 yards, takes a couple deep shots, and the Chiefs win, you know, 31-28. I mean, you could have just a great story. And like, how did the Chiefs win that game? I can't believe that. Well, it's not unbelievable. We're talking about it now ahead of the game instead of after the game going, oh, yeah, I knew Matt Moore would come through. Yeah, whatever. We're saying this, calling our shot ahead of time. Now, the Chiefs might go out and lay an egg. Matt Moore might be horrible. Chiefs might not be able to run the football. The Chiefs defense might not be able to get off the field. And the Chiefs get waxed. And I will tell you this. I forgot the number of the stat, but it's been like at least two full seasons where the Chiefs have not been blown out. Every NFL team gets usually blown out or has a really bad game. When the Chiefs have a bad game, they still only lose by a touchdown or 10 points. They don't get rolled. The Chiefs are due to get rolled.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. Someday it's going to happen. Now, when Mahomes is your quarterback, you would think highly doubtful, because you're still going to score, you know, on a worst day, you score 24 points. Of course, they only scored 13 against the Colts, but that was a mirage, and even then they only lost by 6. The only way they're going to get blown out is, you know, if somehow they're held to 13, the other team goes nuts. So when you got high-powered offense, you rarely are going to get blown out, because you're still going to score your points. But and at some point, the Chiefs are going to get blown out of a football game, and certainly you would think it's more likely to happen with Mahomes on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see this on Sunday night against the Packers. I think the Chiefs will be jacked, and I think it's going to be a really good game. I think it'll be a better game than some people think.
Tim Boyle.
Tim Boyle? Who the heck's Tim Boyle?
I said, who?
He was my dentist back in grade school.
No. Brett Hundley's with the Cardinals.
No, I knew Brett Hundley wasn't with them anymore. I knew that.
It's so funny, though,
because
I type in, who's the backup quarterback for the Packers? The first name that comes up is Brett Hundley, and he's not even there
anymore. Tim Boyle.
That tells you who the backup quarterback is.
It changes your prediction in a hurry, doesn't it? Who would you rather have, Matt Moore or Tim Boyle? Hello? Who would you rather have, Aaron Rodgers or Matt Moore? It's pretty simple. Pretty simple stuff. But it's a team game. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. Aaron Rodgers lost games on the road in prime time before.
Oh, yeah.
And it's at Arrowhead. And the place is going to be loud, and you know, that will give Rodgers maybe a few issues in regards to maybe there'll be a few false starts on the offense, especially if the Chiefs jump out to an early lead. Now, you know, Chiefs are pretty good team. They're a really good team as a front runner, the way they play, although it didn't work against the Texans. They're up 17-3, but then they had a couple turnovers, and that changed everything in that football game. So Chiefs and the Packers should be entertaining. Coming up, 7:20 kickoff, pregame at 6 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. And as soon as the game's over, then it'll be, will Mahomes play against the Vikings? That's what we'll have every single Sunday right after the game, and then the Monday and the following week. Mahomes, this is the week he's coming back? It might. You know, the Chiefs, if they get blown out Sunday night, they might feel like they got to rush Mahomes back. If the Chiefs win Sunday night, I think they'd be like, you know what? We can beat the Vikings without Patrick Mahomes. We don't have to rush him back here. Because then they would be 6-2, If the Chiefs are thinking home field throughout the playoffs, I think that's a little bit naive when you look at the Patriots' schedule and they're undefeated. Although every game counts, and you know you have two losses, and you know you want to catch the Texans, who the Texans now have, I think, three losses, but they have the tiebreaker over the Chiefs. You really don't want to give up a game, but at the same time, is one game on the schedule worth risking Mahomes if he's not ready? And I would say unequivocally no. And oh, by the way, the Chiefs are undefeated on the road, so the Chiefs can still win on the road in the playoffs, especially if Mahomes is healthy. So I've said this for a long time. Home field advantage in football the last few years has been overrated. It's been overrated. We've seen the Patriots go to Pittsburgh and win. We've seen the Patriots go to Arrowhead and win. We've seen teams go on the road and win. We see it in the NFC playoffs, it seems like, more often than not. We saw the Rams go to New Orleans and win. Well, last year, the home teams in the title games lost. Okay? So, to me, I'm not so worried about home field advantage. I know some Chiefs fans are like, oh, you know, we're two games behind the Patriots. But, you know, if we win out and then we beat the Patriots, we'll have the number one seed. I'm not worried about the one seed anymore. The Chiefs can go to New England and win. They won it in New England with Alex Smith. And the Patriots had better offense then. Of course, their defense wasn't as good as it is now. The Chiefs could have very well won last year with Mahomes in Foxborough. And, of course, they could have beat New England last year if D Ford isn't offsides, or they just get a stop on a third and long or a fourth and long. So, can the Chiefs go? If you can win in Foxborough, you can win anywhere. And I'm not overly concerned about home field advantage. I'm more concerned about the Chiefs being healthy when they go into the playoffs, assuming they make the playoffs. And as long as they win their division, they'll make the playoffs. Would being a number two seed be great so you get a first-round bye? No question. But we've seen teams before that have to play on wild card weekend, and they can go to the Super Bowl. It's not impossible. It's happened quite a few times. So would it be nice to be a one or a two seed? Yeah, sure. But is it worth risking and rushing Mahomes back to try to get that one or two seed? I think the answer is no. And by the way, the Chiefs have some flexibility here. The Raiders are 3-3. Even if the Raiders win, they're 4-3, and the Chiefs lose, they're 5-3. The Chiefs still have a half game lead over the Raiders and hold the tiebreaker over the Raiders, and the Raiders come to Kansas City in December. So they're still in control of the division, even if they lose. And if they win and then the Raiders lose this week, and I don't know if they play this week or not, I'll check in a moment, and the Chargers continue to struggle, and the Chiefs have a three-game lead over the Chargers, there's even more reason to say we don't need to rush Mahomes back because we're in control of this division. The only thing that would get you fired up is, oh, gosh, you know, we don't want the Ravens to, you know, be ahead of us in the playoffs, and we really want that number two seed. I just hope the Chiefs don't get caught up in that to where they rush Mahomes back too soon.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if the Chiefs are playing and at full strength, I don't care where they're playing.
I don't really either.
I just don't.
I'm with you.
I mean, totally, it's cool to have the home field and all that, but it's just go out and play. I don't really care. If Patrick Mahomes is healthy and running the team, I'm feeling pretty confident no matter where they go.
You got to worry about the Colts if it comes to home field advantage, too. Although the Colts went in there ahead and won. We saw that. The Colts are a team you probably don't want to see in the playoffs. Denver's at the Colts, so you're probably cheering for the Broncos in that one. Tampa Bay's at Tennessee. Arizona's at New Orleans. Cincinnati winless at the Rams. The Jets are at the Jaguars. The Giants are at the Lions, who've lost three in a row. Chargers are at the Bears. Chargers looking at 2-6 in the face. Philadelphia Eagles are 3-4. Big game at 5-1 Buffalo. Seattle is 5-2 at Atlanta. Carolina 4-2 at San Francisco, 6-0. That's a really good game. You know, I mentioned the backup quarterbacks. How about the Carolina Panthers? They started your 0-2, and Cam Newton, they finally shut him down. And Kyle Allen's their backup, and all he's done is won four in a row, and they've beaten some good teams in the process. And now they got a chance to knock off undefeated San Francisco. Cleveland is at undefeated New England Sunday. The Raiders are at the Texans. Boy, if you're the Chiefs, you know, as a Chiefs fan, you never want to cheer for the Raiders. But in this case, I think you might want to, I don't know. He's going to lose a few more. Maybe you still go ahead and cheer
for the
Texans.
Let's worry about the division first and then deal with the rest of it later.
Okay, that's fine. So we'll cheer for the Texans to win.
Especially when it's the Raiders.
Yeah, that's true. And then Green Bay is at the Chiefs at 7:20 Sunday night, pregame at 6 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake, and then not a good one on Monday night. The Dolphins 0-6 at the Steelers 2-4. You don't think Monday Night Football like to flex out of that game? They're not allowed to flex Monday night.
No.
Sunday night is. That's why Sunday night's so much better than Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football is just not any good anymore. The announcers, I don't think, are that great. I don't like the Monday night production. I think Sunday night is just awesome. And I watch Sunday night, no matter who's playing, I watch some of Sunday Night Football every week. I rarely watch Monday Night Football. I really do. I rarely watch it. Unless there's a great matchup.
Chiefs are playing, I'll watch it. But, yeah. I mean, they're typically, your better games now are on Thursday and Sunday, it seems like, for night. I mean,
Sunday's the best.
Sunday's without question the best.
There have been a few good
Patriots, Jets last week. Like, who watched that?
Horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ratings weren't good for that one. All right, so the Chiefs will see if they knock off the Packers. Dusty's picking the Packers. I'm going to pick the Chiefs to find a way to win, which means the Packers are going to win 41-7. Okay, college football, Texas Tech, a 4.5-point favorite at KU. The Jayhawks, 2-5, 0-4, but almost felt like a win last week. At Texas, up 48-47 with a 2-point conversion, but then the kicker, Dicker the kicker with the field goal on 33-yarder at the horn to win 50-48. KU, you should be excited about what they've been able to do, especially on offense with the new offensive coordinator, Brent Dierman. 5:30 pregame. Kickoff is 6 o'clock this Saturday, tomorrow night on Z96.3 The Lake. And Les Miles talks about the differences on offense for his Hawks.
It is a new offense, but the similarities between what we ran in the first several games and what we're running now are significant. It's just that the approach is different. And I think Mr. Dierman is doing a great job in pushing connectivity and team and physical play and yet similarities between some of the things that we call and dissimilarities. I mean, there's some specific to him additions.
I think KU gets it done this week. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid because of what they did at Texas. I know there's a week of film now to study in regards to Coach Tierman and his offense after playing at Texas, but Tech's not a great team, although they've been competitive in every game. They don't have their starting quarterback. They have a backup. They've got some explosive offensive players, but they're not very good defensively, which is kind of the thing with Texas Tech every year. I know they're a 4.5-point favorite. I'll take KU to win this game. What about you?
I'm a Tech in a very close one.
All right. So you got. Well, we're just disagreeing on everything when conditions come. We'll see how good we are coming up on Monday.
I think we're going to disagree on the next
one. No, I think
we're
probably going to be agreement here. Oklahoma, number 5 in the country, a 23.5-point favorite at K-State. The Wildcats 4-2, 1-2 in conference play, a big win over TCU last week. Chris Klieman, head coach of Kansas State, talks about Jalen Hurts and that OU offense.
It's really impressive, and you look at where Jalen Hurts is at this year because he wasn't in the system very long, seeing what he's been able to do running that offense, and it's a phenomenal offense as it is, but he's running it at a really high level, and obviously that's the biggest challenge, is he can beat you in so many different ways.
The bigger story for Oklahoma is their offense is usually always going to be good, as long as they have a really good quarterback or a great quarterback. The question is, can Oklahoma stop anybody? Coach Klieman on the OU, improved defense so far this year.
I don't know what it was in the past, but they just play really, really fast. They, I think, have simplified things just in talking to, like, Coach Klein and some of the guys that have been around. That they're a lot simpler in what they're doing. They're playing things really fast. They get off blocks. You're just not sustaining blocks on those guys, which is the sign of a great defense. And I think they're a really good tackling team, which is another sign, because in this game of college football right now, it's all about plays in space. And it doesn't matter who they're playing, you see people get the ball in space against them, and there's no yards after contact. Well, that's a sign of an exceptional team that understands where they fit within the defense and then is really efficient about being able to tackle people.
Okay, now, I'm going to say this. I'm going to be consistent with what I'm saying today. The lazy pick here is to take Oklahoma without thinking about it. That's the lazy pick. 2 years ago, Oklahoma came into Manhattan. Alex Delton was a quarterback for K-State. And K-State was tied, I believe, 28-28 in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And could have easily beaten Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield, Heisman Trophy guy. I mean, Oklahoma was loaded on offense. K-State nearly beat Oklahoma 2 years ago, and K-State wasn't that great. So if K-State can almost beat Oklahoma 2 years ago with Alex Delton at quarterback, why can't they do something special tomorrow? I'm not going to pick them to win, don't get me wrong. But it might be a lot more. It might be more competitive than people think. 23.5 is a big number, but there have been times Oklahoma's gone to Manhattan and absolutely just crushed the Wildcats, much like they did last year in Norman. So the lazy pick initially, without thinking about it, is to say Oklahoma's going to crush Kansas State. Once you think about it, and look at this, and look what happened a couple years ago in Manhattan, if you could say, listen, K-State's got a chance to stick around for a while, and who knows, Oklahoma makes a few mistakes. Maybe they can pull off the upset. The problem I have in picking K-State to cover the spread, because I'm not gutsy enough to pick K-State to win this game, I just can't go there, is because K-State isn't running the ball very well. And when you're only averaging 2.8 yards per carry against TCU, and that counts a 61-yard quarterback draw on your final drive, I mean, Malik Knowles has to play in this game and has to be effective for K-State to have any chance. If he can't go or if he's banged up or he gets hurt, he changes what K-State does offensively in the passing game. And Oklahoma can load the box, and I bet you they will. They're going to load the box, stop the run. And then here's the thing. TCU wasn't a great offensive team. So K-State could get away with, we'll punt it and play field position. Now, against Oklahoma, you punt it, it's like a turnover. Because Oklahoma, more than likely, is going to go down and score. The other problem I have in this game, I don't know how K-State's secondary can cover Oklahoma. I just don't see how they can cover Rambo and CeeDee Lamb. I just don't see it. And then, can you get a pass rush? And here's the thing. With Jalen Hurts, what makes him so special, especially him and Kyler Murray the last 2 years, you can get the greatest pass rush in the world, and it doesn't matter. Because Jalen Hurts is going to find a way to break a tackle, elude the defender, and make a play with his legs or his arm. It's a really poor matchup for K-State. The easy pick here, without thinking about it, the lazy move on to the next game prediction would be OU in a landslide. And I think that's probably, honestly, a pretty good prediction. But that's what a lot of people said 2 years ago, and everybody was wrong.
Yeah. You didn't even mention the biggest issue I have in this game is K-State can't tackle in the open field.
Here's the thing, Dusty. I don't think that's an issue. You know why? Because I don't think they'll be close enough to tackle in the
that's
open field.
Yeah, that's true. Rambo
are in these games? I mean, they're open by 10 yards.
Yeah, but I mean, like you talked about, if you get pressure on Jalen Hurts, you will be close enough to tackle him, but you're not going to tackle him. If Max Duggan can run all over you and bust off all these tackles, I said that right away. I turned to the guy next to me in the press box. I'm like, what's Jalen Hurts going to do next week? I mean, they got a lot of improvements to make in 1 week if they're going to stop him. That's the thing for me is why I say that. Because
I think it's a mismatch.
If you get the pressure on Jalen Hurts, they can't. Those guys aren't going to be able to break down and tackle him in the open field the way they've been playing this year. And I get it with the receivers. They're athletic. They're quick. They're always wide open, it seems like. Yes. And if they're not, Hurts is going to beat you with his legs. So it's just not like you said, a lazy, easy pick is to pick Oklahoma to win big, and it's probably the smart pick.
It was two years ago, and it wasn't right.
Yeah, and that's based on what we've seen. But again, there's a lot of times where Oklahoma goes into these games, and they know that's the smart pick probably, and they probably don't play and perform to their capabilities.
Right.
But I don't feel good about K-State this weekend. Just looking at it and kind of analyzing some of the things they can't run the ball against anybody. And if they can't do it against Oklahoma, and they don't put points on the board and they give the ball up too quick, it's going to be a long day.
Oklahoma will have next week off, so they don't have to, it's not like they're looking past K-State to a game next week. That's a big game. They got next week off. I'm with you. I mean, when you really do break it down, it's hard to come up with a scenario where K-State is close in this game. It really is. But if they can somehow run the ball effectively, that does change things quite a bit. If they can go out and run at 4.5 yards a carry, now they can shrink the game, time of possession. You have long drives. You have to score when you get in the red zone. You limit possessions Oklahoma. It's much like what you tried to do against the Chiefs offense. And this is what K-State did 2 years ago against Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma. They had the long drives. They scored. Then eventually Oklahoma struggled in the first half.
Some takeaways.
And then they figured it out, got some couple of takeaways. Yeah. Now, Baker Mayfield's not as elusive as Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is more of a powerful runner. As Toby Rowland, the voice of the Sooners, said on our show a few weeks ago, Kyler Murray was a Lamborghini or Ferrari, and Jalen Hurts is a Mack truck. And that's not a good matchup for K-State. So in order for K-State to have any chance in this game, they've got to be able to run the ball. They got to establish the run, and they've got to make some plays on defense, probably force a turnover or two, to have a chance in this game. And they have to start off really well. If they get down 10-0, 14-0 right off the bat, it's going to be a long day, I'm afraid, for K-State, because you get down by 2 scores early, you don't have to give up on the running game, but if you're not running it well, you tend to give up on the running game. And I'm with you. I think it's a mismatch. I don't see a great scenario where K-State can maybe they can cover the spread with a backdoor cover at 23.5, but I just don't see how K-State's going to win this game. But 2 years ago, we didn't think they could win the game, and they nearly did. So that's why we
played 4 years ago, we felt actually better about them having a chance in the game, and they lost 55-0.
Right.
You just never know.
That's what I'm saying. Go the opposite of what you think, maybe. Who knows? But Oklahoma's so good, and they're better defensively. That's the thing that tells you OU is going to win because their defense is better. They're still without their tight end. He's missed the last few games, and he's a weapon. And they've just No big deal. Mm-hmm. No big deal at all offensively. Rest of the Big 12, Oklahoma State is Iowa State. That's a good game in Ames at 2:30. Iowa State ranked 23rd. Texas at TCU. Who knows what happened that one? That's at 2:30. We mentioned Texas Tech at KU. That's at 6 o'clock. Pregame at 5:30 on Z96.3 Lake. And Oklahoma at K-State tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Top 25 games this weekend we'll get to in a moment. But first, Nebraska, they have a matchup against the Indiana Hoosiers. I'd like to know the last time Indiana, well, I don't even know, has Indiana even played in Nebraska before? I think they have once or twice since they went to the Big Ten. Indiana's a two-point favorite. The Indiana Hoosier football team is a two-point favorite at Lincoln at Memorial Stadium against the Huskers. Here's Scott Frost on the Indiana Hoosier offense.
I like what they do. In fact, I look at it and it looks a lot like what we do. Watching them, I could call most of the things I see and our kids go out and run it. So I give a ton of credit to them. I think what they do on offense is smart. I think they scheme well. I think they, you know, they've got a more dangerous passing game than we've probably seen in a while, just because of what they do. I think is good. Both quarterbacks can run and throw. They got a big back that you have to get hats on, and defense has to be ready to play well.
I haven't seen anything official. I haven't followed as closely. If Adrian Martinez is a go and ready to play, I would guess he would. And that changes and helps the offense for Nebraska. But they're without running back Maurice Washington. When I watch him run, he's a playmaker. And he hasn't played much the last few games, and now he's not even listed on team's depth chart. So apparently he's either not on the team right now or he's suspended. Nothing's really official other than he's not in the team's plans right now. But Coach Frost has said he could come back, but just not right now and in the foreseeable near future. So I don't know what that means. I guess to me it would mean that he's probably done at Nebraska, but officially that has not been determined. Nebraska is hosting Indiana. They're a 2.5-point favorite are the Hoosiers. Indiana's 5-2, Nebraska 4-3. And Nebraska, this is a big game for them. You can't be losing at home to Indiana if you have some higher aspirations to go to a decent bowl game. All right, MIAA this weekend. Well, first, before I get to that, top 25, there are three big matchups. Number 13, Wisconsin, is at number 3, Ohio State. Ohio State's favored by 14.5. I know Wisconsin has a really good defense, but I don't think it matters. Ohio State is just, I don't see how Wisconsin wins this game. And I don't even see how Wisconsin covers this. I know there's a scenario. They play great defense, they run the ball, they shorten the game. I just don't give Wisconsin much of a chance at all winning at Ohio State. And if they struggle against Illinois, what are you going to do against Ohio State? But then again, maybe it's just a bad day for Wisconsin last week. Number 9, Auburn's at number 2, LSU. LSU a 10.5-point favorite. LSU, you know, to me, those are the top two teams in the country. Ohio State and LSU, you can take your pick, one or two. I think Alabama's probably 3, although Oklahoma, I think, is up there too. Notre Dame, number 8, is at number 19, Michigan. Notre Dame is a 1-point favorite. Is there a more overrated team in all of college football last few years? Well, actually, these are the two. Notre Dame and Michigan are always overrated. But I think Notre Dame's legit this year. But Michigan is always overrated. And I just see Michigan losing again. They lost last week to Penn State. They never win a big game with Jim Harbaugh as quarterback, or as a quarterback. Well, that too.
They probably didn't do it when he was quarterback.
Yeah, and they definitely don't do it when he's the head coach. The MIAA this weekend, Washburn hosting Central Oklahoma, Pitt State at Central Missouri State, Emporia State at Missouri Western, Lincoln at Northwest Missouri State. They'll try to bounce back from their first loss of the season. Fort Hays State is hosting Nebraska Kearney. That's a look at the MIAA. World Series Game 3 is tonight, and the Nationals have a chance to go up 3-0. The place will be rocking in D.C. National fans are excited. It is Anibal Sanchez on the hill against Zach Greinke. The former Royal has to come through for the Astros tonight. If he does not, this series is over. He has to come through tonight. This is why they traded for Zach Greinke. And former Cy Young winner, he has to pitch well tonight, you would think. Maybe not. Maybe both pitchers will get rocked, and it'll be 5-5, and both pitchers are gone in the third inning. It's always possible. But this place is going to be jumping tonight. I wish I could watch some of it, but I won't because I've got football, and that's fine. The Nationals up 2-0, and Astros, in essence, it's a must win. You got to win. No team has been down 0-3 in the World Series, come back to win. So Greinke, all the pressure is on his right arm. For the Astros, the Nationals are having fun celebrating in the dugout after home runs. They're loose as a goose, and they got some margin for error here. And I think the Nationals are going to keep the foot on the pedal. But one win can change everything. And if the Astros can find a way to win, then all of a sudden this series becomes very, very serious. If the Nationals win, then it just looks like it's going to be a laugher. And who would have thunk that before the series began? So World Series Game 3 tonight. NBA last night, there were some interesting games. There were only 3, but they were all very, very interesting. Trae Young is fun to watch. I remember we had somebody here at the studio said Trey Young was a bust and was a bad pick, and he was wrong. And you know what? I'm wrong, too. I've been wrong on things. I did not think that Landry Shamet would be a starter in the NBA
right now.
Oh, no. I did think Trae Young was going to be really good. I thought it would take Trae Young longer than this. I thought it would take him at least a year or so to get acclimated. It took him about half a season last year. Last night, he shot in a half-court offense a shot from the Pistons logo. I'm not lying. From the Pistons logo and drilled it. That's what he did at Oklahoma. 38.7 rebounds, 9 assists for Trae Young. Him and Doncic are unbelievable to watch. They're so fun to watch. And, you know, the Thunder have lost Russell Westbrook, Paul George, traded those guys away. I like to go to a Thunder game once a year, about a 4.5-hour drive. And I usually go to watch George, or I go to watch Westbrook or Durant when he was there. Now, I just talked to my son last night. We got to pick a game where we watch either Trae Young or Doncic. Because those two guys are the future of the NBA.
Yeah.
They are so fun to watch. Hawks win last night 117-100. You got Trae Young, who's 20 years old, and then Vince Carter has been in the league for 22 years coming off the bench. Vince Carter has been in the league longer than Trae Young's been on Earth. It's kind of funny. Yeah. Hawks win 117-100. Yeah. Though the James Harden-Russell Westbrook experiment last night didn't work out too well. Harden was 2 of 13 from the floor. Westbrook had a big fourth quarter and almost had a triple-double, because Westbrook just knows how to stuff the stat sheet. It's just amazing. He can be quiet for three quarters, and yet at the end of the day, you look at his box score, and it's like, triple-double again. The Bucks win last night 117-111, despite Giannis fouling out with 5 minutes to go. He had a triple-double before he fouled out. So the Bucks beat the Rockets 117-111. You know, we were trying to pick who's going to win the Eastern Conference. My pick is the Bucks. I'm going to go with the Bucks after last night. The Sixers don't shoot the ball well from the outside. They can't. They don't have any outside shooters, the Sixers. Embiid is, you know, banged up from time to time. Ben Simmons can't shoot the rock. They don't have J.J. Redick. They don't have Jimmy Butler this year. I think the Sixers are going to have to make a trade to find a real good shooter to be in this equation. I think the Sixers could be great defensively, but the Bucks are good defensively, and they got shooters all over the place. And Chris Middleton is one of the most underrated players in the league, and he got a max contract or a big contract in the offseason, but he's an all-star. That guy, I never thought he'd be that good. You know, I was talking about a former person here that, you know, said Trae Young is going to be a bust. I would have never dreamt Chris Middleton would be an all-star.
No.
I mean, out of A&M, but he's been great, and the Bucks got depth. So I like the Bucks out of the East. I've changed my mind. I'm going with the Bucks. After one game, I was impressed last night. And the Warriors, it's just weird not to see Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson on the floor with Steph Curry and Draymond Green. And Steve Kerr said before the game last night, he said, I'm really worried about our defense. He goes, I just don't know. Well, I see why. Steve Kerr's a pretty smart dude. Clippers had 141 last night. Clippers win at Golden State to open up their new arena in San Francisco. Clippers win 141-122 was the final. The Clippers jumped out to a 16-0 lead in this game. D'Angelo Russell, he's a scorer. He's going to do his thing. Kawhi Leonard last night, 21 points, efficient night. Patrick Patterson had 20 points and 6 threes. That's a guy that was a bench player for the Thunder. Now he's starting for the Clippers. Landry Shamet had 11 points. Lou Williams off the bench with 22. Montrezl Harrell, 18 off the bench. The Clipper bench almost outscored the starters last night. This is why the Clippers are the best team in basketball, and it's not even close. And we said this before anybody jumped on the Laker bandwagon. They got Anthony Davis, LeBron James. Well, the Lakers are the best team. But no, they're not.
No.
I mean, the Clippers can go 9 or 10 deep. I mean, they got guys that play defense, and they got guys. Lou Williams coming off the bench that would start for any other NBA team at 22 last night. I mean, they flat out got guys that, and they don't even have Paul George playing yet. When they get Paul George, then Shamet will come off the bench probably. So, I mean, and they got Beverly. Last night I saw a great example of why the Clippers are going to be so good. Last night there was a bad, horrible pass by Lou Williams, and it went right at the feet of D'Angelo Russell. And so the ball ricochets off of Russell, and Russell just stands up, starts to turn to go get the ball, but didn't dive on the floor at all. Patrick Beverley comes out of nowhere, dives, gets the ball, calls a timeout. It's game two of the regular season for the Clippers. Yeah. He is the heart and soul of that team. I know Leonard's unbelievable, but Beverley is the emotional leader of that team. He plays hard all the time, and he sparks his team. You know, Hudson Smith for Beloit. You know, they're going to miss him this year in basketball. That's a guy that, you know, at the end of the game, you look at the stat sheet, like, oh, okay, he had 6 points, 3 rebounds, 4 steals, and, you know, 18 floor burns. But how many extra possessions did he get for his team? And he was a really good defender, even though he's undersized. Patrick Beverley is that type of guy. I mean, he can defend. He gets in your grill. He annoys the opposing best offensive player, typically. He can score at times if he needs to, but he doesn't have to on this team. He played 28 minutes last night. Here's his final stat line, Dusty. He had 5 points. He made 1 3. He had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and 5 steals. That's a really good game. But a lot of people just overlook it. And he starts. He's a starting point guard on this team, believe it or not. So Patrick Beverley is, honestly, I think, the heart and soul of this team. And, of course, Leonard's awesome, and he's the leader of the team. And then wait till they get George back. But that right there showed me what I needed to know about the Clippers. They're hungry. Leonard's always hungry. And the Clippers without Paul George, and they're still rocking teams. They beat the Lakers on the road. They beat the Warriors on the road last night. So they're legit. And to me, they're by far the best team in the NBA. And they don't even... They don't even have Paul George yet. Wait till they get Paul George. I mean, eventually, you're just sitting there going, the only thing that's going to blow up this team is injuries or players going, you know what? I'm tired of only playing 18 minutes since we're 10 people deep. I want to play more.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't help my numbers. I got a contract year. That's the only thing that breaks up this team is selfishness and injuries.
And they don't have guys that are like that on this team, no. To be completely honest with you. No. This is a throwback.
If they have an injury, they're still got enough depth to overcome it.
Yeah, this is like a throwback type of Spurs team I used to watch, except they're supercharged on offense.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
yes,
they agree. They play well together. Deeper. You know, Patrick Beverley's your Bruce Bowen kind of player and just gets in people's grill.
That's
and
a good comparison.
And, you know, and obviously Kawhi was part of that at times for the Spurs. And
sure.
It just really is. It's not a team that has malcontents or anything like that. They're going to get all mad because this guy's getting the glory and this guy's not. You know, it's just it's a throwback type of team for me that actually plays offense too.
And it's scary. And they play hungry, and that's what I like. And a Zubac guy they got, Lakers traded him away at the deadline last year, remember? And now he's on the Clippers, and he's a good young big man. So Clippers have an embarrassment of riches. And, you know, I talked about last year, they won 49 or 50 games. They didn't have Leonard or George. Now you add Leonard and George, and, yeah, you trade away a few younger guys, but it's not like they were in big trouble to lose a ton of talent.
Mostly
because the cupboard was far from bare. They didn't trade everything away to get those two guys. I mean, this team is just so deep, and they could overcome an injury. I mean, if Leonard or George gets hurt, one of those guys, like we've seen right now, not playing George, they'll be all right. They really will. Man, they're going to be tough. Really tough to beat. And here's the great thing. The Clippers are so deep that they can rest Leonard here and there, so he's ready to go for the playoffs like the Raptors did last year. So, you know, one of the reasons the Raptors won the championship last year, it's overlooked. They were 17-5 without Kawhi Leonard last year when he was out, sitting out, resting. The Raptors had depth, too.
Yeah.
And that's what the Clippers have. And Kawhi was very smart to sign with the Clippers, although, according to reports, he was close to going with the Lakers, but he wanted Paul George to join him, and once they worked out the trade for George, Kawhi Leonard said, you get George, I'm there. And the Clippers said, we don't care what it costs. We're going to go get him, which is smart. They had all the assets, and they're not just getting one guy and trading for Paul George. They got two. People got to keep that in mind. They gave up a lot? Yeah, they did. But it's looking pretty smart right now.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.